Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The X-Files by Morgan Elizabeth. Narrated by Monica Plant and Julian Durant. Prologue. Sometimes you can look back and find the exact moment you made one impulsive decision that changed the entire scope of your life. Today, I made two. One was deciding not to get gas at the station near my apartment before work, meaning I had to drive through construction to get to my meeting later that day. The second was RSVPing plus one to my father's wedding. One. Cassie.
Okay, I'm leaving, Gabrielle,
I say over my shoulder as I walk towards the office door. It's small, but I never imagined I'd be here when I started the X-Files from the top bunk in my dorm room. 7 years later, I finally have a lease on a small office in town with an assistant and a roster of clients, all relying on me to change their lives.
Cassie, wait!
Said assistant calls at me. Turning towards her, I smile. My assistant, Gabrielle, is tiny and cute in a nerdy way with thick-rimmed glasses and blunt bangs a la Zooey Deschanel. Her long hair is usually pulled into a messy knot with a pen sticking out like it is now. She wears a mix of retro skirts and quirky t-shirts that would look tacky or forced on anyone else, but on her is adorable. When she reaches me, I'm pulling the strap of my bag over my shoulder and grabbing the keys to my new car. In her hands is a stack of paper she keeps on a clipboard for moments like these. Our office is tiny, not even sectioning into different offices, just small work areas, but she follows me around like Andy in The Devil Wears Prada.
What's up? I have a date at 5.
I glance and see I have about an hour to get to the Italian restaurant he booked across the city. Thankfully, I have a collection of dresses, outfits, and makeup here, so there's no need to go to my apartment before heading out. Still, I'll be cutting it close enough. I'll need to avoid rush hour traffic and take back roads to get there.
At Teresa's, right? On Westport?
She glances down at her notes and I nod.
With Jason Falcone, the marketing exec?
I nod once more.
Okay, perfect. This is date two?
It is, and the first one went wonderfully, meaning I'm actually looking forward to this one. Mr. Falcone was a true gentleman, pulling out chairs and holding doors and answering all of my questions with an ease I rarely see. He should be easy to pair with someone, and I already have a few clients in mind. It's rare I don't get at least a glimmer of something on the first date. The tiniest sliver of the real man all men hide behind the facade they think women want to see. They all love to play the nice guy, the gentleman, but each one has some other version hiding. Deciding whether that actual version is a walking red flag or a good guy with some flaws is why women trust me with their potential soulmates.
Yes, it should go well, and then we can get him on the schedule. I'm hopeful I can get some notes for you before the morning.
She nods before continuing to look at her clipboard, this time gnawing her lip. Gabrielle has worked for me for about 10 months. 2 months longer than I've held this lease. She's attentive and always on top of things, but she hates drama and conflict. This means one of two things. An unhappy client, or...
One more thing. Your father called?
My gut sinks. I'm not surprised. I've been avoiding him for weeks now, and he probably needs my answer.
He asked me to confirm you're not bringing a guest?
She cringes at the words, hating to put them out there. But it's not her fault. Dear old Dad is getting married for the third time to some beautiful young thing, I'm sure is either my age or younger than me. Every time I talk with him, which isn't often,
To be fair, I get the question I'm dreading. Are you bringing someone to the wedding? It's valid. With wedding planning, you need to know who's coming and who isn't. But in this case, it's not what he's asking, but what he means. The question is common and mundane from anyone else, but not with my father. Not with his side of the family looking down on me for years, seeing me as lesser. Too thick, too loud, low class. Always single because I can't find a man. The daughter of the woman who was too stupid to see the truth. If I show up alone, I just know I'll get the questions, the judgment, the snide remarks, the quiet whispers. The thought of showing up alone and facing the firing squad judging makes me queasy. But I don't date. Ever. Why bother when every man is the same? Hiding the shit parts and fluffing up the appealing ones to capture your heart. They all work to pull you in deep, so when their true colors come out, you can just brush it under the rug and coast on the sweet memories. I've seen it time and time again. It might be a surprise, my being so cynical about love and relationships and men while being a matchmaker, but it's what makes me the best at what I do. The men I meet, the men I vet, I know them. Dig deep to find their weaknesses, the ugly spots. Then I shine a spotlight on them and reveal the hidden truths so that each woman I pair is fully equipped to handle them, pairing up the right bright spots with the right shadows in each personality to make a beautiful masterpiece that can coexist perfectly. It's why I'm the only person who goes on the dates, asks the questions, takes the notes. It's why the X-Files is literally my file of exes I've dated. I can stay unattached, see through the bullshit. And while love always ends in heartache for someone, I supply my clients with a more complete picture of who they're hitching themselves to in order to avoid even more disaster. But dating someone beyond my requisite two dates? No. I've seen enough of the aftermath to know love isn't in the cards for me. The rubble it leaves in its wake isn't worth the risk. Hence, my conundrum. I'll handle that on Monday or Tuesday. Cassie, she trails off, but I know what she's saying. This isn't the first call I've dodged. It's just the first one today. I need to give an answer, if only so my new mommy doesn't call personally, making it awkward for Gabrielle, who will probably break out in stress hives trying to dodge the drama. Am I bringing someone, or am I once again showing up alone, without a man on my arm? The perfect target for pesky questions I do not want to answer. The scales in my head balance my options. Show up alone and hear the whispers pointing out my flaws, all the reasons I can't keep a man, just like that mother of hers, or find a solution. The truth of the matter is, I want nothing less than to show up at the wedding alone. The thought makes me queasy. Knowing I'll be facing questions about my single status, about when I'll have kids. Relatives I see less than once a year will mumble under their breath about how maybe I could keep a man if I lost some weight, or tried harder, about how I'm not getting any younger. And shit, it's not like I'm 50. I'm 29. And I'm building my own business, happy with my life the way it is. I don't need to add a man and make things more complicated. Plus, I've learned with time, a man will offer nothing other than whiplash and heartache. An orgasm or two would be nice, my inner sex fiend whispers. The inner sex fiend who hasn't been satisfied in much, much too long. Some people have a devil and an angel battling on their shoulders, whispering in their ears. Because I'm a crazy person, I have a sex fiend and an uptight librarian who keeps me grounded. I mentally stuff a sock in the sex fiend's mouth and shut her into the dark closet I keep her in. I have a perfectly capable collection of battery-operated boyfriends. Thank you very much. What more could a man offer me? Precisely, the librarian says. The one who always uses common sense to remind me men bring nothing but pain and suffering. The one who looks alarmingly like my mother. I sigh. A man would offer me the chance to show up my father, though, and quiet the judgmental family who hates me. The librarian shrugs because even she can't argue that fact. So, in that moment, I make the fatal move of deciding something based solely on emotion, not on intelligence or planning or my rules or my carefully crafted life plan. No, this one is pure idiotic impulse. When he calls next, tell him I'm bringing a date. Gabrielle's eyes widen with shock before she nods, jotting down a note. Before she can say another word, I wave goodbye and walk out the door, wondering what the fuck I've just done.
2. Luke. My phone rings from where it sits on my toolbox, the vibrations rattling on the red metal and catching my attention more than the ringer. Glancing at it, my sister Quinn's smiling face is staring at me with "Quinny calling" written across the screen. She added her own contact years ago, using the name I called her when I was just 3 or 4. I'm covered in grime and in the middle of a job, but my dad taught me no matter what, when family calls, you answer. Family is more important than any job, any repair, anything. So I peel off the grease-covered latex gloves, toss them into the can next to the car I'm working on, and tap the screen to answer. "What's your email address?" Quinn asks before I even say hello. "Well, hello to you too, Quinny. I'm great, thank you." The sound of her eyes rolling can practically be heard over the line. The thing about being the little brother is I live to annoy my sisters. It's basically the main thing I was born to do. And with 2 older sisters, 1 5 years older and 1 10, I've had more than a few opportunities to do just that. "Yeah, Luke, hi, how are you? Still as boring as yesterday and the day before? Great. Now, what's your email?"
"Why?"
"Why what?"
"Why do you need my email?" She hesitates, piquing my interest. My 2 older sisters are both happily married with kids of their own to bully and baby, but they each still call me nearly every day to check in. Unfortunately, they're also the nosiest women I've ever encountered. As the youngest of 3, I've learned this kind of silence can be one of 2 things. 1, she's trying to save my feelings. This is rare because, again, she's my older sister. In the same way I live to annoy her, she lives to bring me down a few notches. Whereas my older sister, Tara, still babies me and lives to give me motherly advice. Quinn taunts me. Alternately, there's option 2 and the situation I'm pretty sure I'm in now. She doesn't want to answer my question because she knows I won't like it.
"Quinn," I say in a warning,
"I'm creating a profile for you."
"What kind of profile?"
I already know. I know where this is going. It's where nearly all of our conversations end these days. "A dating profile." Ding, ding, ding.
Jesus, Q, no.
This has been going on for 3 years now. The day I hit 30, my sisters decided I needed a wife and kids to keep my life exciting and happy. But I disagree. I'm satisfied with my life. Happy to be working on cars, living simple, going out for beers with friends, and just being. Eventually, I want all of it, what they have. The family, the kids, the white picket fence. But profiles and apps and countless first dates sound painful. I'm just waiting for the moment the perfect woman falls into my lap. That's not too much to ask for, right? Luke?
"No, Quinn, I'm not going on some weird catfish, crazy swipe right app. It's not for me."
"Luke, seriously, listen."
When I decide to find someone, I'll do it the old-fashioned way. I'm not looking for hookups. And I know you mean well, I do. But you're so far out of the dating scene. You lucked out. Found Ty back before the apps and complicated dating. It's just a lot of trial and error. And I don't want to spend months having first dates that lead nowhere.
Luke, shut up for 2 seconds. God, it's not an app. And you don't have to do anything at all. You'll only be set up with good matches looking for something serious. If you don't want to go on a date after that, don't. Hell, you're so boring there's a chance you won't make it past the screening before anything happens.
Screening?
If you'd shut up for 2 minutes, I would have told you it's not an app, and you do nothing. Just go on 2 dates, and then you'll get set up. Unless you fail because you're secretly a waving red flag. But I'm telling you now, if that happens, Tara and I are going to kick your ass. I sigh, having heard this before. I was raised in a loving household with happily married parents and 2 older sisters. My dad taught me how to wine and dine, throw a ball, and get my hands dirty in an engine. But my mom and sisters taught me how to treat a woman. They showed me the ropes, from holding doors open to how to treat a woman when she's emotional, to making them feel good about themselves to the right way to break up. Once, Quinn heard I'd broken up with a high school girlfriend via text message. When my mom picked me up that day, all 3 were in the car. We sped home and they ripped me a new one, telling me they wouldn't endure having that kind of man in their family. When I tried to get my dad on my side, he'd sat me down.
Son, one day you'll have someone in your life, and you'll realize you'd do anything to keep her happy, even if it means letting her sit your son down and bust in his balls with feminist chats and conversations on how to treat a woman. There are worse things, bud. Just accept it. If not for whatever future lady you have in your life, then for your old man who doesn't want to hear his wife bitching all night about the piece of scum son they're raising.
I heard that, Jeffrey,
my mom had called from the other room. My sisters giggling after her, and my dad just rolled his eyes. But the smile was genuine, because he loved her. And he'd endure this to get her, to keep her happy. I never made that mistake again, always having any conversation of consequence face to face. It was one of many lessons I never forgot over the years.
Fine, I'll bite. What are you talking about?
Over the years, I've also found it's easiest to let my sister get it out now than argue. At the end of the day, I'll still have to sit through her speech, but the process is more painful if I delay it.
I have this friend. Do you remember Jamie?
I don't, but if I admit it, I'll get an hour-long summary of Jamie, her relation to my sister, and every interaction I have ever had with the woman, even if it was as minute as attending the same holiday party 7 years ago.
Sure.
Okay, well, Jamie met this guy through this matchmaker.
Oh, hell no. Absolutely not.
Shut up and let me finish. So, she met him through the matchmaker, and they've been married for years. Perfect couple. Like they were meant to be from day one.
Quinn, I don't.
I try to cut in, but she keeps on. So, Jamie's sister went to school with this girl, and I have the inside scoop. Usually, she finds the men to match through dating websites. Crazy, right?
She dates them and vets them, and then matches them up. It's genius, really. Like, cutting out the middleman to avoid the catfishes and creeps and red flags. But because she knows this girl, she told me I could just fill out an application, and if you pass her inspection, you're in.
Like always, the words fly through the phone line with her excitement.
You needed a trained ear to catch Quinn's every word on the first try. I don't want to meet some matchmaker, Quinn.
Look, you just need to go on 2 dates with her. Easy peasy. Call it an early Valentine's Day gift to your favorite big sister.
Christmas was just 3 weeks ago.
I don't know why you're being so difficult when all I'm trying to do is improve your life, Luke.
Well, you're trying to send me off with some unknown matchmaker, so...
She's not unknown. She's a friend of Jamie's.
I don't know Jamie.
You just said you did, though,
Quinn yells, and I pull the phone from my ear with the shriek.
I lied.
There's no need to yell, Luke,
I sigh, knowing arguing here is pointless. So instead, I make my tone neutral and calming.
Quinn, you called me and told me I'm, for some reason, going on dates with a matchmaker to get more dates with other people. Because I'm apparently lonely, I'm happy with my life, Q. I appreciate the gesture. I don't need anyone.
We're worried about you. Her voice has gotten soft and concerned, a tone I recognize. Shit. I need to fix this before it gets sticky.
No need to worry about me, honey.
You're always working. You come alone to everything. Shit, I don't know the last time you brought a woman home. Wasn't it weird at Christmas?
It was, not that I'll admit it. Christmas dinner at our parents' was the same as it's always been, but also not at all. My sisters are married with kids, both with husbands who are chatting about family vacations and wiggly teeth, and I just sat there. I couldn't relate. For the first time in my life, I didn't feel connected to my close-knit family. As my sisters grow into their own families, I'm feeling left behind.
We just want you to be happy, Luke.
Who's we?
I don't know why I'm saying this. It's basically opening the door to her, giving her hopes I'll say yes to this mess.
Tara, Mom, and me.
You pulled Mom into this?
It was her idea. She said it's killing her to see her baby boy lonely. The teasing tone is back.
You guys need to stop. I'm not lonely.
I don't bother arguing the baby boy crack. As both the youngest and the only boy, I am 100% my mother's baby boy. Some days it's fine, like when I always get the biggest slice of cake or how I got away with way more than my sisters as a kid. Other times, like this, it's the absolute worst.
Yes, you are, Luke. You don't have to admit it to me, but you're not that guy. The guy to live alone for the rest of his life unattached. You love family, but it's not going to just fall into your lap, babe. You need to actually go out and find it. I know you're happy, but soon everyone around you is going to be attached, and you'll be alone. I don't want that for you.
Quinn's always known me best of all, regardless of her endless need to mess with me. Right now proves it. I've lived my life with little to no change, gone out to games with friends, spent long days on the pier, kept the same daily routine for years. And year after year, I continue to do it without issue. But it's predictable. It's the same. And sometimes, even though I refuse to admit it to my nosy-ass sisters, it's lonely.
Just give it a chance, Luke.
I don't know. It seems so weird. Why don't I just, I don't know, download some apps, go on dates?
So you're admitting it. You want someone.
Shit. I'm not saying I'm unhappy or lonely.
I pause, planning my next words carefully.
But you're not wrong. I want a family, eventually. And you're right, I'm not getting younger. I'm not just going to stumble upon the perfect woman on the side of the road.
Perfect. So let's make it happen. Let's find you a woman. I want a sister.
You have a sister.
A new one with more fun clothes. Tara just wears leggings and gym clothes all day.
I laugh. She's not wrong, though I'm sure Tara wouldn't like her calling her out like that.
Let me try it on my own. I'll join some of those sites, download the apps.
No apps, they're cesspools.
I love trashy women,
I say with a smile, knowing her response before she even says it.
That's what got you into this mess. Trashy women who aren't looking for something real.
Once again, not wrong.
Please, just go on the two dates. If it blows, you can cancel after that. I won't hold it against you.
And if I don't say yes?
If you don't say yes, I'll tell Mom you're lonely and sad and you haven't met the love of your life yet.
Jesus Christ.
No, don't do that. She'll hook me up with everyone's niece and granddaughter from here to Philly.
Quinn laughs an evil laugh I've heard many, many times over the years. I sigh, resignation clear in the sound.
I'll do it. Send the details.
Yes! I promise you won't regret it,
she says, but I doubt it. Things like this always blow up in my face. But before I can argue, my work phone rings from beside me and I have to answer.
That's work. Gotta go, Q.
Got it. Love you, bro.
Love you, too.
I disconnect before answering to hear I need to take the truck out and tow a car two towns over. I clean up before I leave, but something about our call, about the impending shit show, has me distracted the whole drive there.
3. Cassie. You have got to be kidding me. My brand new BMW made an unsettling sound on the back roads before my tire pressure light came on, blinking to tell me my rear passenger tire was dangerously low on air. I tried to rumble on, praying I'd reach a turnoff, a gas station, something on the windy, deserted road, but eventually knew any further and I'd be screwing up my car. So, topping off my shit sandwich of an evening, I only have 10 minutes to change a tire, drive back to the city, and get to this date. I'm squatting in my red-bottomed heels on the side of the road and inspecting the clearly flat tire as if I know what to do with it. Spoiler, I don't. This is the last thing I need right now. After leaving the office, I realized I was dangerously low on gas and needed to stop at a station. Everyone knows there are two people on this planet, those who fill up their tank when they hit the halfway mark, and those who fill up 10 miles after the gas light goes on. I'm in group two and regretting it. If I had just filled up on my way into the office, this would have been avoided. I vow from now on I'll fill up at the halfway mark. Hell, maybe the three quarters mark. Whatever it takes. To get to the gas station closest to the office, I was forced to drive through a construction zone, adding 7 minutes to my drive and, from what I can tell, a nail to my tire. Why me? I kick my tire, then curse when the movement reverberates through my open-toed shoes and up my leg with a sharp pain. Ripping open the front door, I lean over to find my bag and pull out my phone to call roadside assistance, the contents of my bag spilling out across the console as I do. Adios, lip gloss I'll never find again. When I glance at my phone, my misery grows. No bars. Are you fucking kidding me? I shout to the sky, fighting the tears that want to fall. Stupid, stupid tears every woman sheds when the world seems to be against her and the walls are closing in. This is not me, frazzled and emotional. I don't cry. I don't let my feelings control me. I live by rules, by plans. Structure and systems keep me safe, stable, and away from emotional turmoil. But the message from my dad, my stupid, stupid panicked decision to tell him I'm coming with a date, it all has me a mess. The entire drive, my mind sorted through options to get out of the wedding. From faking an illness to hiring an escort in order to make it out of this in one piece. And now I glance at my phone again, 7 minutes to drive 15 minutes to meet with a potential new match. Taking a deep breath, I run through solutions. I need to be sensible with this to lay out my options.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?